out of Boston, Massachusetts. This is the Knuckle Push-Ups NBA podcast. Sean Silver here, joined, as I am every week, by my good friend Patrick O'Connor. And P, I got to tell you, last week I said it's the most wonderful time of the year, and I was talking about the holiday season. This week, I'm talking about December 15th. That is when NBA trade season officially becomes a reality.
Yeah, I think it's for as crazy and up in the air as the NBA was over July, everything's coming back down to earth at the beginning of next week with the trade window opening. About 2 months till the trade deadline, I think it's going to be a pretty hectic sprint to, like, right around the All-Star break, and then we'll kind of see what everything looks like as the NBA turns the corner towards the playoffs. It all starts now, baby. I mean, it all starts the 15th. That window's open. The cold air starts blowing in. Let's scratch some tickets, see what we got.
February 6th, the closing date for the NBA trade deadline. I learned something on Celtics Twitter the other day, and it was the fact that the term the quarter pole.
Okay.
Sean Grandy used this in his broadcast a lot. He says, you know, we've hit the quarter pole, meaning we're a quarter of the way through the game. Well, are you aware of Dr. Jeff?
I'm not. Who's Dr. Jeff?
He's an avid Celtics fan. He's a dentist or orthodontist. He's very into oral hygiene.
Okay.
But he's also very into the Celtics, and he made the point to Sean Grandy on Twitter that the quarter pole actually describes the final quarter of a race.
Interesting.
So I would have loved to have opened up this podcast saying we're at the quarter pole. What was it, the T-Pain line? If you ain't got it by now, you just ain't getting it. Whatever language you use to describe it. And if you do think that you have something, you better go out there and make sure that you can hold on to it.
I think the really interesting thing about that is that we talked last week, and we've been talking the last couple of weeks, just about why ratings aren't where they're supposed to be, or, like, being two guys that are just living and breathing this every day, it's kind of hard to imagine why not everyone is just living and breathing the NBA, but people aren't. So we spent a couple episodes talking about ratings and how people consume this stuff, and I think that the shot in the arm that we need until however many play-in tournaments or mid-season tournaments or early season tournaments or whatever Adam Silver is cooking up, whatever that gets put into place, until then, what's going to draw more people into the NBA and the intrigue is what hooks them on the summer. It's when free agency happens. So we've got a little kind of like a depth charge of that now with the trade window opening. Normally, this day pretty much kind of like comes and goes, but the NBA is really good at eventizing everything. So I'm interested to see if the eventizing of the trade window opening actually makes some moves. Now that everyone who made crazy Hail Mary trades over the summer or signings over the summer, those guys can all be traded now. So I'm interested to see what everything looks like with the free agency hangover now taking hold and everyone looking at their assets in the cold light of day to see who's going where and who's getting what back.
When the lights come on, everything gets ugly for some teams.
Yeah.
The New York Knicks certainly firing their coach, David Fizdale, last week. God knows what they're up to. I don't think we're going to spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about the Knicks. But, yeah, this is the classic trope. What are people talking about on sports radio? Sports radio isn't really a venue for the NBA so much. It's kind of like a side dish to, you know, NFL talk, college football talk, whatever. But people writing about the NBA, people discussing the NBA, it's usually through the lens of player movement.
Yes.
That's what really gets people going. So the fact that this is a thing that can happen now is just ultimately going to lead to more exposure at the league. You can try and break down pace of play, you can try and break down the product that we're seeing, but that's really only going to get so far. It's the real hoop heads who are on League Pass, who are watching a bunch of different games a night, and who are tuning into the product every night. Any old Joe who watches, you know, a couple Celtics games a week or one NBA game once in a blue moon, they can all have opinions about trades. So we want to tear the lid off of trade season in our own special way, discuss the status of some of the prominent teams out there and some of the not so prominent teams who could be accommodating moves by some of the real movers and shakers and teams that'll be there come May and June.
Yeah, so what I did for this is I put together, I dusted off some Google Sheets expertise here and put together my own version of the knuckle push-ups decision matrix, kind of mapping out all the knowledge we have. I broke down the status of every team into seven different categories. I mean, we could break it down even farther, but I think the overarching ones, I got it down to seven, which I was pretty proud of myself, instead of 30 or 60, because there's two sides to every coin and there's 30 teams in the NBA. But I think there's really seven categories that can sum it up nicely. It's teams that are looking to hold strong, meaning they don't really need to make any moves now. They got a good thing going, and we're going to ride this pony till at least the trade deadline. There's teams that are one move away, teams that are looking to strengthen their bench, teams that need to move a contract, almost addition by subtraction, but they're looking to get out from something maybe they are taking a hard look at, don't really want any more of. There's also teams who are willing to take a contract, maybe facilitate something like that, or get some butts in seats by signing an all-star player, anything to put on, like just to broadcast, like a reason to watch the game. A lot of teams are willing to take something like that on. There's also teams that are just completely stuck. They've painted themselves into a corner. Or there's teams that are looking to blow it up, hit the reset button right now. It's only a quarter of the way through the season. Those teams have already emerged big time. We've kind of known it since before the opening tip. But now it's all kind of coming to fruition. So a couple surprises in there too. But those are my seven categories. So I figured we could start there.
Yeah, your knuckle push-ups decision matrix actually looked a lot better than my knuckle push-ups jump to conclusions, Matt. So I'm glad we're working with that.
Don't give away future pod ideas, Sean.
So, all right, let's talk about the teams that you and I see as holding strong. That would be someone who's jumped out to a really good record, presumably, or has a strong belief in the foundation of their team and probably doesn't see themselves making a big move. I'll take a look. I'll let you know about the ones that I see as holding strong. And for that, I say the Toronto Raptors, also the Los Angeles Clippers. And for me, that's pretty much it.
Oh, okay.
I think it's kind of a thin crop of teams that I think are holding strong. But when I think of that expression, I think of teams that they're just really pleased with their roster construction. In Toronto, they've got veterans. They've got young guys. It's just a nice little stew. And I think a similar thing in L.A. You've got superstars. You've got bench players. You may need one move there for nominal depth. But I think those are teams that are going for it.
My hold strong list looks an awful lot like yours. I've got Toronto and the Clippers on there, too. The only other team that I would add to that mix is Milwaukee. I think our reasons will probably wind up being the same. We're just thinking about it a little bit differently. I think a team like, essentially, it's like, well, we don't want to rock the boat too early. So at this point in the season, only a quarter of the way through, teams like Milwaukee's, they're on a 15-game winning streak as of pod time. They've won 15 in a row. Giannis is playing out of his mind. MVP last year, playing at or above that level already. Looking like the beast in the East. Like, I don't, like whoever's going to get around them is going to really have to catch fire at the right time, or they're going to have to start imploding, or there's going to have to be some pretty massive injuries in order to kind of slow down that roll. But again, we're a quarter of the way through.
Well, the proof is in the pudding, and you know, how about this stat from ESPN Stats and Info? The Bucks, the fifth team in NBA history to outscore opponents by more than 320 points through their first 24 games. So if you can do back-of-the-envelope math there, that just shows that they are dominating people. Two of those teams won a title, 1970 Knicks, the 08 Celtics. The others were the 72 Bucks and the 2016 Warriors. So, I mean, the Bucks just on a torrid pace right now. But Giannis is literally doing everything there. And for me, I mean, even though everything about that team says hold strong, we're playing great, when you get into the springtime, they're incredibly deep too. They have a bunch of guys who can come off the bench and do a couple of things for you. But are those guys going to be a factor when literally everybody is keying in on Antetokounmpo?
Well, that's the thing, right? Here's my question for you about the Bucks. So how often in the past have you trusted Wesley Matthews or Eric Bledsoe to get you what you need when the game is on the line?
Not often.
Not often. Easy to trust them in
both
February.
Nice players.
Yeah. Easy to trust them in February. Not as easy to trust them in June, we'll say.
That's why I think that this is a team that's one move away, Patrick.
Okay. Okay.
And now particularly given the contract situation with, you know, the presumptive MVP, I think you're looking to take some of that depth. You're looking to take contract filler, and you're looking to flip it for somebody you'd feel comfortable taking that last shot with if you can't get the ball to your top player.
Okay. So not to give away the second half of the pod here, but who are the guy in order, if you're going to one move away, there's one half, like the Bucks have to be part of that move, right? So what are you looking to move to kind of get that thing back, and what is that thing you're looking for? Yeah.
You cobble together a few of those guys, maybe a Korver. I mean, how many one-dimensional, you know, three-point shooting players do you need on the same roster? You could put like three or four of them together with maybe a draft pick and get someone held in a bit higher esteem, I think.
I think the way you got to move on this, if you're Milwaukee, is you do have to kind of be contract conscious. But rather than going for an established superstar, maybe you're looking for that third type of Heat, someone who's just starting to simmer. So maybe you package together either a Wesley Morris and a pick, or maybe one of the Lopez brothers and a pick, or a couple players or something. And you make an offer to a team who's probably not going to go anywhere this year. And the team I'm thinking of, that like the crystal ball that I'm gazing into, tells me maybe they make a run at the Sacramento Kings and someone like Bojan Bogdanović.
That would be juicy. A lot of people have him, you know, kind of on their dance card, and that's a guy who's going to be a free agent coming up, I believe. Sacramento, I think, would need a lot to part with him, because they'd probably like to have that ability to bring him back as an RFA.
I don't think they're going to be able to pay him.
I mean, that's the thing. Right. They're a team that needs to, you know, get rid of a contract. We put them into one of those groups. I mean, it's tantalizing because he's probably one of the best players that they could get.
Yeah.
I say look at a team like Washington, who's a little bit stuck right now and might be trying to get assets any way they can. What about Davis Bertans?
Yeah, exactly. I think he fits the same type of mold as Bojan Bogdanović. I think it's the same type of idea. But you see, they're not going, it's not like they're not trying to trade for someone who's a little more established, where it would take more to get someone to move.
Yeah.
It's a guy who's like, it's basically a Marco Bellinelli type, Marco 2.0, or a younger version of Marco, or maybe trying to fill what they thought your boy Nikola Mirotic was going to be last year. You know, that type of threat on the perimeter.
Or the thing that they consistently go back to every time that they re-sign Ersan Ilyasova.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And just to kind of use a fighting analogy, man, to quote the man, the original man, Ric Flair, to be the man, you have to beat the man. And for the Bucks, they don't have to beat every single team. Whatever they add to their team doesn't need to get them over. Doesn't need to win them the NBA title. Just needs them to win them the East. And then they take their shot in the finals. Right,
sure.
Where it's a completely different game again. So, but I think adding something to make them even stronger, or another depth, another weapon of depth on the Bucks, that all they need to do is get past Toronto and Boston, and I think they're there. I don't think anyone else can really match up with them. So, as we've already seen this season, the Celtics were able to get around Milwaukee in the second game. Now, granted, a lot's happened since then to both teams, but what we saw down the stretch there is that if you frustrate Giannis or kind of like can get around Giannis, there's not a whole lot else that team can offer. I don't think that's going to change. So they got to try to improve that if possible.
What about some of the other teams that are one move away? I think there's a lot of just kind of due to the fact there's a lot of parity and they might be kind of feeling themselves. I mean, in the East, I think Milwaukee, Boston, Miami, those are three of those teams who are looking to make a substantial move. I think out West, you could say, Dallas is in that category. Denver is probably in that category as well. Do you have any thoughts on those selections or some of your own?
Again, there's a reason why we're a tag team, buddy. We're thinking about this the same way. The Celtics, in the East, I have the Celtics as listed as one move away. And then all my other selections are from Western Conference, Dallas, Denver, and Minnesota. Now, I think the one thing I'm thinking about when putting together this list isn't necessarily who's one move away from competing for the title, just who needs who's one move away from improving their team. You know, the NBA, it's a quick 82 games, but you got to look at these seasons as almost like generations of a team or eras of a team. So it's one move away from kind of like strengthening that core that's going to carry you through this era. So for a team like Minnesota, they've been tied to Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins for a long time. They've taken on some other contracts. That's kind of like they're testing out kind of what their core is going to look like. And I think it's like a move like for them being one move away, I think could be throwing in a Hail Mary offer to get D'Angelo Russell on the team, a move that was highly kind of like theorized about over the summer. And with Golden State in the dire straits that they're in, they might be listening. You know, there might be some stuff they could pull off or, you know, maybe be a facilitating type of team that could ultimately land D'Angelo in Minnesota. This is one of the best starts to a season they've had in quite some time. Karl Anthony Towns is kind of like entering his prime or like the first stage of his prime. So they want to get him a running buddy that's going to be really strong for a while. Andrew Wiggins playing with a chip on his shoulder after being ranked, I think, 200 by Sports Illustrated to start the season. So anything that's fueled by Spite, I'm all for. So that's really good so far. I don't know how long Spite's going to take you. So they're going to need something else, too, that's going to be one move away to kind of put the young Wolves back together and see if the young Wolves can mature into an actual Western Conference contender, or at least a threat, someone who's going to be a gatekeeper or a challenger that's going to be a tough out in the playoffs.
See, I like your theory there, and maybe they can pull it off by moving a guy like a Jeff Teague, who's an expiring contract, maybe moving, if they can move Dieng's contract, you know, guy playing 12 minutes a night, making an awful lot of money, that would be helpful for them. But I kind of feel like they had this hot start. They've kind of come back to earth since then. And that may be a realization for them, like, okay, well, Andrew Wiggins is definitely making the jump. We already know that Karl Anthony Towns is our franchise player. We have got to wipe the slate clean around these two guys and figure out exactly what the right mix is. So I think, frankly, that Minnesota will be looking to get out of some of these contracts, maybe get some assets in, and start trying to figure out what their roster construction is going to be for their next winning team if it's 2 to 3 years away.
Right, so like they're currently sitting at 9th in the West or 10th in the West. Not great, you know, but like there's not a whole lot that separates the people who are the teams that are making the playoffs and the teams that aren't. Yep. It's still early, and it's early in the season, you know. I mean, they're sitting with a record of 10-13. So are Sacramento, and Portland is 10-15. I mean, there's not a parity. Is kind of like this is the other side of parity, right? So when like there's a lot of parity across the league. A lot of records look the same as well. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how they emerge, or if it's just kind of another season where it's like a lot of promise up front and no steam in the engine down the line. So yeah, I think now is kind of the time where it's like, we're going to have to take a hard look in Minnesota and what really can we do? If they're going to build around Karl Anthony Towns, he needs a Pippen to build around, and probably like a Luke Longley as well.
Right, yeah. I mean, it might be Wiggins as the Pippen.
It might be.
He's definitely shown some signs this year, but yeah, maybe it's not Luke Longley. Maybe you have a Rodman. Maybe you have a Horace Grant. you need someone there who does a lot of things well, and yeah. I just feel like Robert Covington is that player for them. I don't think that he's an impactful long-term player for them, even though he's cheap. He's injury-prone. He's close to 30. And he's also a guy who could bring you some value. I think there's a lot of guys who would be out on the market for a player like Covington right now, including teams like the Rockets.
He's the dude that gets you to the dude who gets you to the other dude. You know, yeah. He's the gateway. I mean, I think he's the Swiss Army knife type of dude, right? He was kind of like Jay Crowder filled that role in Boston a couple years ago.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, if that's kind of who you need, like you're like captain of the bench type guy, it's like he's done that in Minnesota, and I think other teams are going to come calling looking for someone like that who, again, can just kind of strengthen the bench, add a little bit. I don't know what that's going to net you, though. So it'll be interesting to kind of see where Minnesota nets out. But I don't know. I don't know if we're going to live to see a Minnesota Timberwolves dynasty. I just don't.
I mean, we certainly haven't thus far. They've been a team for 30-plus years, and really the closest they came was that Sprewell, Sam Cassell, Kevin Garnett, Western Conference Finals team there. I mean, they tried it a few years back. They had Tibbs in the mix. You know, they added Jimmy Butler, and that just went very poorly. Minneapolis, nice city, fun time, but I don't know about going through a winter there.
Yeah.
You were talking about the bench, and that's probably the least sexy part of this trade discussion.
Yeah.
But some of the teams that are just looking to strengthen their bench are teams that are already pretty sexy, or, you know, they think they're sexy, and they know it. That would be, to me, teams like a Philadelphia, an Indiana, I think. I don't think Indiana at this point, I don't think they need to do anything else but get Oladipo back and then strengthen their depth. And I think Indiana is a team that could go for it in the East. Out West, I think the Lakers fit that bill. I would also say Utah as well. Their lack of depth is one of their biggest problems so far, you know, as including Mike Conley's kind of inability to coexist with Donovan Mitchell. I think they might be able to figure that part out, but their lack of depth is something that continues to haunt them.
Quick tangent. Are we sure Donovan Mitchell's a good teammate?
Why wouldn't he be?
Well, who do you put the U.S. finishing seventh in FIBA on? Do you put it on a Celtic or do you put it on Donovan Mitchell?
I put it on a lack of star power and cohesiveness.
Okay. I don't know. I just kind of think Donovan Mitchell, I don't know. I mean, I'm basing this on almost nothing but a gut feeling. But, like, okay. I was looking at, like, the Celtics. Like, if we look at the chemistry that the Celtics built in Team USA over the summer, right, they're all that has translated really nicely into their season thus far. I know there was looked like there was a little bit of static in the play between Kemba and Donovan Mitchell during FIBA. So that's just kind of like got me thinking, like, is this guy trying to show out right now? I don't know. But, like, it didn't really seem cohesive. And now Mike Conley, like, leaves Grit and Grind. Like, that team's in full-on reboot mode. He goes to Utah. People are really amped and psyched. And granted, this isn't all on Donovan Mitchell. Mike Conley's having a hard time finding his footing. But it's just weird that, again, it's like, well, there's another guy that can't really jive with Donovan Mitchell. So I don't know. I'm just like a little side tangent, a little thought experiment, maybe a subplot of, like, is this guy a good guy? Or is this teammate a good teammate?
Well, it's fair, and I'll make a comp. I mean, Tyreke Evans, when he came into the league with the Kings, everyone was like, wow, this is the next guy. His rookie year, he was really highly regarded. And then he kind of plateaued, couldn't coexist with other cast members in the Kings universe, and eventually wound up being kind of a journeyman who flamed out in several different places, kind of with similar criticisms.
Yeah.
So is Donovan Mitchell going to become that, or is he going to become a guy who's on the All-Star team every year? The decision is his. It's an interesting theory, Patrick. But as far as team strengthening the bench, I think it's kind of blatantly obvious who those teams are. I think we have a very similar list there.
We do. Yeah, the only I think with the Lakers especially. I mean, the Lakers, as much as it hurts me to say, are killing it right now. A quarter of the way through, the best team in basketball right now, and, like, they're playing like it, man. But I think a lot of the other teams are realizing that no matter how good your roster is constructed, it's kind of hard to beat AD and LeBron playing like they should have been playing, you know, for a long time. This is what Anthony Davis is capable of. It just took playing with the greatest player of, you know, the second greatest player of all time along his side to get him there. Bully for you. The fact of the matter is that, like, you're going to need more, I think, to really kind of to win a title and win the East definitively and really kind of be the clear-cut champ, which the Lakers want to be. I'm praying to God that they don't. I need the Celtics to win one before the Lakers win two. I'm worried that, like, how they strengthen their bench might be somehow figuring out a trade for Andre Iguodala to get Iggy in purple and gold, which would be bad news. But they're kind of stuck in that way because who could they possibly trade that Memphis would want to give them Iguodala? Because they're certainly not going to buy Iguodala out.
That's what everybody seems to be expecting to see happen. Iguodala wind up in L.A. That would just be the neatest fit. You know, you add a veteran to a team of veterans. You add a guy with that sort of winning experience that could get LeBron another ring or get Davis his first ring. But Memphis, they know that it's a seller's market. So they're going to be looking for some stuff here.
Yeah. And I don't think the Lakers have it, because I don't think they're not going to pick up the phone if they think they're offering Rajon Rondo or Avery Bradley or Alex Caruso or even Kyle Kuzma. I think the Memphis has got to be thinking, like, if it's not going to immediately help us right now and there's no picks attached to it and there's not going to be any picks, that it's how is it going to help us? There's no reason to help them, so why would they?
They've already sat out this far on Iguodala and done nothing. I mean, so there's no reason to jump unless it's the 5th of February and you're got your back up against the wall needing to do something with this asset.
We're not talking about Keith Bogans here. You know, it's there's a reason to want to, like, sign Andre Iguodala. I mean, the fact that that no one has so far, it's got to be because it's like, well, you haven't offered me you haven't sweetened the deal enough yet for Memphis to really take a serious look at it. I think they're playing it completely right. Wait and see.
Yeah, kind of like how New Orleans waited with Anthony Davis. I know we're talking about players of a different caliber, but sometimes it shows that patience can be very, very beneficial to you. You can get quite a haul back in return. So you came up with a list of teams that need to move a contract, and we've already mentioned a couple of these teams. For me, it's teams who kind of have their backs against the wall due to the way that they've cooked their books. Minnesota, one of those teams. I think that they need to move a player to at least create some flexibility to get to that Cat era Wolves team 3.0. Sacramento, definitely one of those teams who just good young team, but really aren't going to move anywhere in the discussion until they do something to free up some space. I would say the Spurs are in that group as well, and Portland, and those are the teams out west that definitely need to make a move just to get some money off the books. And out east, I would say Detroit. Blake Griffin may not be the one moving, but you got plenty of other guys there that are making some money. And if you want to do anything with this Blake Griffin contract, you're going to have to do something pretty quick.
Now is the time. If you want to move Blake Griffin, you're going to have to do it pretty soon. I think it's Father Time is undefeated. And I think Blake is 31 or 32 now. So it's
man.
Yeah, it's time. And for a guy like him, he can still add a lot to a team. But I think rather than being an ace, I mean, he's now like that kind of third type of Heat. He's added something to his game pretty consistently over time. And I think he could add a lot to a team who's looking to contend, you know, but it's not that easy to get a deal like that done. He makes a lot of money. A lot of times when you're making that much money, bad contracts only move for bad contracts, or unless someone's looking to bottom out. And if someone's looking to bottom out, they're not contending. So it would be a shame if Blake Griffin is the one guy from his, or one of the guys from his generation to play his whole career and not really compete for a title. That would be a real bummer. Our lists are very similar though. For the East Coast, I had Miami, Indiana, and Detroit all looking to, like, they need to move a contract if they're going to move forward. But different reasons for each. I mean, Detroit is that their cap is perennially messed up. So I don't really know what their move is. They've got to do something though. Andre Drummond could be up. It's a really weak free agent class next summer, so he could be on the move eventually. So that might be something they look to move now and kind of expedite the bottom out process and hit the reset button just a tad early.
That brand new building.
Yeah.
And they're already bottoming out.
Oof. Yeah. And there's a rash of that going around the NBA too. So yeah. Looking right at you, Golden State.
Let me ask you about a couple of these other teams out east that you see, you know, as guys who'd be moving a contract. I mean, I saw Indiana as somebody who would be looking to add to depth, looking to strengthen the bench. Indiana, Oladipo is going to be up after 2021. They're going to have six guys next year making between $10 million and $21 million. Is that kind of it there? Because, like I said, I think Indiana with full health is, you know, is potentially an Eastern Conference finalist / title contender this year. Do you think that they need to move, like, one of the Miles Turner / Sabonis combo? Is that it?
I do. You got to move one of those guys, right? I mean, because I think if they're trying to compete in the East, they're very good. They're an upper echelon Eastern team, and they're pretty young too. And they've got a lot of nice pieces that you can build around. But with having a lot of nice pieces you can build around, we're not really sure who's going to be the centerpiece right now, right? Maybe it's Oladipo when he comes back.
Maybe.
Maybe it's Sabonis.
Maybe it's Brogdon.
Maybe it's Brogdon. You've got a pretty nice, you've got an exciting young bench. You've got the American Matthew Dellavedova
TJ.
And TJ, you know,
But don't you have to play that out? I mean, don't you have to see what this group is capable of before you make a move? I mean, you got to get Oladipo back, and you've got the strong like front six or seven, and you just kind of roll with it and see what happens.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I almost look at it like, we're gonna jump sports right here though. But what was the catalytic move in 2004 for your Boston Red Sox? Would you say before they won the title, what was the big thing that they did that season?
They moved an all-star and Nomar Garciaparra had to move role players.
Exactly. Had to move the soul of the team, man. And, like, it was hard to do. I could not believe it. But the end result was winning a championship.
Yeah.
You know, so, and not that Miles Turner is the Nomar Garciaparra of the Indiana Pacers. But
that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch. But you've got a guy in Miles Turner, still really early in his career, has improved every single year. Does a lot of really interesting things, can add a lot of depth and a lot of different skill sets to another team. So I think that kind of picking and choosing, is it Sabonis or is it Turner? Who's your guy? You can get a lot back for that. You know, and teams that are, again, there's not even options for people to strike out on in free agency this summer. So making maybe putting together like 80% or 83% of your best package for a guy like Turner now might be a good move. And it's not necessarily going to be for a contender. It might be a team like Atlanta that's like, hey, look, we're not going to contend this year, but we're putting our team together. We're not the Avengers yet, but by 22 movies from now, we will be in the end game. So that's the way I'm looking at it. So maybe it's like a move like that. And Indiana gets back in return, maybe someone who doesn't replace Turner, but does something equal and opposite that helps the team get to where they need to be.
How about Miami? That's a team that I've heard rumored in just about every big name. You know, people have mentioned Chris Paul. I think it was on The Ringer, Jrue Holiday, you know, might be a perfect match for them. I've heard Kevin Love bandied about there, DeMar DeRozan, any sort of kind of B player who might fit alongside Jimmy Butler, somebody has brought up.
I have them firmly in this category of need to move a contract. Right? I don't think Dragic. I don't think Goran Dragic is their guy for the future.
No,
and, like, they got
in order to take a step, they need to move him. Yeah,
yeah. So they got to move him. I don't know where they're going to move him to.
Probably Goran Dragic and Kelly O.
Yep.
Are your guys who you move that makes the money work, and you match them up like with one of these young guys who's really taken a step forward this year if you want to bring a guy in. But my question is there a guy who could really coexist in that Jimmy Butler world? I mean, they've looked so good with it being Jimmy Butler is Superman and everybody else is a mere mortal who, you know, contributes to the cause.
Right.
If he were to welcome in, you know, some sort of running mate, does that throw everything off? Because we know how Jimmy Buckets does things.
Well, I would look at, like, my favorite thing to do in situations like this is look for the comp, right, where it's already happened. Like, what – just describing that, like, one guy who's trying to do everything, Superman, and everyone else is mere mortals. Who does that sound like in the Western Conference?
Houston?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm thinking of – it does sound like Houston. Could it either be James Harden – or could be a new member of the Houston Rockets, Russell Westbrook. Both those guys play like that. And correct me if I'm
wrong. Supermans, and right. Now they're together.
That's right. And also, it's like, and that's combustible as hell. But the point is, not a lot of titles between the two of them, baby. You know, so like,
If
you, like Jimmy Buckets, like, yeah, man, cult of personality is very strong. And you could find some guys that can fit around that. And maybe, but like Jimmy also. But if Jimmy is going to get there, I don't think he's going to win a title until he has almost like a Paul Pierce-esque come to Jesus moment where it's like, we need some other guys that are in the same boat as I am to team up and kind of give of ourselves to get something greater in return. I don't know if Jimmy Buckets is there yet, and I don't know who it's going to be in Miami that's going to be able to do that. Maybe it's Kendrick Nunn. and Jimmy Butler and Kevin Love, but I don't think they'd be trading for the Kevin Love that they need. They'd be trading for the Kevin Love of now.
He's like that big ticket item.
Yeah.
I feel like he's the one that everyone's talking about. He's the one that's got the all-star pedigree, but he hasn't been that player that people are salivating over in a while. And yeah, I wonder for Jimmy Butler's sake, I mean, it's getting pretty late in the shot clock for that guy to do a total sea change.
Who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. I probably am, but I don't know who it is that's going to save Miami. I mean, they're playing pretty good now, but again, one quarter of the way through the season, anything can happen. Like, look at every single game. You know, you can be leading for three quarters and then fall apart at the end and lose a game, lose a title, lose a series. You could also fall apart in the second quarter and completely fuck up the rest of the game and not be able to recover. So one quarter in, Miami's looked pretty solid. But, I mean, as soon as, like, frustration settles in, starts blowing through Miami like a hurricane, I just don't know, like, what that's going to net out. I mean, Jimmy's not going anywhere. He's their dude, and they just got to find the pieces around him. And I don't know who that is. But I know they got to move a contract because it ain't Goran Dragic that's gonna help him get there. So he's the guy that has to move. Kelly O is just a – he's going to make the money work.
If teams are looking at this point to just – move some money, set themselves up for free agency. I don't know why they would necessarily, because free agency in 2021 is not all that appealing. There's some teams out there that are willing to eat the mistakes of their brethren. So I think in the Eastern Conference, teams that will take a contract would include the Chicago Bulls, the ever moribund Chicago Bulls, the Charlotte Hornets, who seem to have just gotten out from under some contracts and went ahead and added some others, and the Orlando Magic, who are in a sort of a similar situation as well. Out west, that to me is Memphis and the Phoenix Suns, who got off to a pretty strong start, but you know, have, much like the Timberwolves, fallen back to earth a little bit, but probably are looking to add, I don't know, a backcourt player or somebody with a name that makes you just believe in their cause a little bit more.
Our lists are almost identical. The only difference I would make is in the East, I've got Atlanta on this list as well.
Oh, you know what? I had them too. I just didn't mention it.
Well, but look at that. You know, category for category, we're in lockstep here, pal. The
wow.
Yeah. I every single team on your list is 100%. They'll take a contract if needed. And I think it's motivated by a couple things. One, they want to show teams and they want to show guys in the NBA that, hey, we may not be your first free agency destination, but we stick by our guys and we do what's right by our guys. So we'll take on contracts. We're looking to get creative. We want to build something. We want to build it around you. Those are all really good things to hear, especially if you're like looking at moving to a team or if you're looking to kind of be the guy that gets you to the guy ultimately that you want. These are teams that are, they'll take a contract because they're one step away from blowing it up completely. I agree. I just don't know who they're going to go after, but they'll probably get involved in trades where, like, Kevin Love may not land on one of these teams, but one of these teams can jump in to help facilitate that. Boston was in this role not that long ago, 6 years ago. I mean, this is what Boston did and did really well, and it only took, like, the rebuild was done in 15 months.
Yeah, they did the will take a contract thing several times consecutively.
Oh, Gerald Wallace. I love Gerald Wallace. Send him over.
Or crash. I mean, you know, you see some guys out there that might wind up in this category. I mean, it's kind of like if a contender decides that a player is either too rich for their taste or just doesn't fit their system. I mean, Chris Paul could wind up doing this. Kevin Love, as you mentioned, could wind up doing this. If the Spurs decide to part from DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge, and all these 3-and-D teams are just kind of like, oh, those are nice mid-range players, but they don't fit our bill and they make a lot of money, they may wind up in a change of scenery. I feel like a guy like a Gallinari, he probably winds up on a contender, or a Covington winds up on a contender. You know, Steven Adams probably winds up on a contender. But, you know, there's some definite, like, B-level players who they come into a mix. There's teams that are in fan bases that are starved for names, starved for, you know, vestiges of success. We want to see some of those guys suiting up in our uniforms, and you could definitely see that happen. So
That's a local TV market move, baby. That's like we were talking about ratings a couple of weeks ago, and how do you turn it around? Like someone who it's like that's not a hoop head, that's not like really kind of blasting out hot takes or trolling on Twitter to kind of like find out, cheering for like who the eighth guy on the Charlotte Hornets is. You know what I mean? Who it's like, you know, guys who aren't playing fantasy league and just like just like streaming through League Pass, trying to find something to give them an edge. You want someone who it's like the casual fan has, oh, I've heard of that guy. He's on this team now. Yeah, I'll watch it. That's a move for that. So like the whole Danilo Gallinari or Jeff Teague or like one of those mid-level dudes who someone's probably heard of before or who probably rolled through town and kicked their team's ass once upon a time. Now he's on that team. Like that's the move for this. That's this category here. So, and again, the Celtics have been here before. And not even just in the 2000s, man. I think Dominique Wilkins was probably this type of move when they signed Neek back in the mid-90s. So, and they all the teams you mentioned are right firmly in that camp. It's just going to be interesting to see what they have to part with, if anything, to do that. Like, are the Magic ready to give up on Aaron Gordon? And if so, are they willing to take Blake Griffin back? You know, to put like maybe that's the move.
Aaron Gordon not having a great season, but you'd probably think there's a few more miles of tread on those tires. The Magic have some pieces. Fultz now playing a little bit more like you expected him to be. Evan Fournier playing out of his mind. Yep. And you still got Vooch. So those are teams that, you know, hey, we'll take on a contract if you can convince us the right way.
Total facilitator type of team, dude.
Yeah.
So I would expect them to be involved, any of these teams to be involved in every high profile discussion and land none of the reason why it's intriguing.
Yeah. You mentioned local moves that are made for local TV. The teams that have made these moves are teams that you would say are completely stuck.
Yes.
They've already gone all in. And for whatever reason, you know, it hasn't worked out. For me, Brooklyn's on that list. You know, you're waiting for Kevin Durant there. Nothing much can be done about that. Washington, you're waiting on John Wall. Lord knows if John Wall ever comes back, but until then, they are completely stuck. The Rockets are completely stuck to me, as well as are the Golden State Warriors. I think we have similar lists on this as well. You add the Pelicans. I also see you putting Portland on there, but I feel like Portland has enough big contracts that they got some wiggle room.
Yeah, they might have a little bit, but I think it's like they too, where it's like they're kind of – I don't think they're stuck necessarily because they don't want to – I just don't know what type of moves they could get into.
You know? Take back Kent Bazemore and Hassan Whiteside. We'll take player X.
Exactly. Like there's not a whole lot. They lost in the offseason what made them really special last year, right? So they were kind of a facilitating type of team where they almost like a West Coast Boston where they gave a lot of guys back their career. You know, Evan Turner fit that mold in Boston and translated it into a big contract in Portland. But like a guy like Mo Harkless, they just let walk, you know, and is now like a really solid contributor for the Clippers.
Yeah.
Kent Bazemore as well. Like they have Kent Bazemore and Hassan Whiteside, but those guys, what are they doing? Like I'd rather have Al-Farouq Aminu.
Now they're, as you call them, the Western Conference version of the Brooklyn Nets.
Yes. That's a great comp.
Which is maybe not the greatest place to be right now.
And they're both stuck, right? Because, like, what can they truly do? They're limited by who wants to get in bed with them. Like, so no one's going to – I don't think anyone's going to be going out of their way to trade for the stuff that's just propping up Dame and CJ. You know, it's so I don't know. I don't know.
Well, if you're the Cavs and you know you can get out of a Love contract, maybe you're sending him home.
Right.
You know, and taking on Whiteside for a couple more years and taking on, I think, Bazemore's an expiring.
Yeah. And you're just like, yeah, great, because there's no illusions here. We're not going to be good anytime soon. We're doing this for the future draft picks. We're doing this for our own picks. Those are the guys they want to move. But that's like Wheel of Fortune, dude. It's like you got to hope that you land on something good. It's those situations aren't like flying around. So I think that's why like a team like Portland is stuck. It's just a better version of stuck than some of the other teams on this list.
And then finally, you got the teams that need to hit the reset button. This is kind of the most, I guess, embarrassing place to be as an NBA franchise. But given the way that rosters are constructed now, it's really not the end of the world. Teams have shown that you can hit the reset button, and with a couple of ticks of good fortune in your direction, you're right back at it. Teams that need to hit the reset button for me in the Western Conference, you got New Orleans, Oklahoma City. Out east, I think that you've got the Knicks and the Cavs are reset button teams. I saw that we had a bit of a disagreement there. I think that New Orleans needs to hit it. You think that New Orleans is stuck. Is there any way that the Pelicans can get out of the hell that is this season without Zion Williamson right now?
I think that's it, man. I mean, I think Zion Williamson is that they got to wait and see. They got to like see what he actually is before they do anything. Because if he's the generational version of Shaq, you know, and then it's like you hold on to him, you do whatever you can to hold on to hopefully the generational version of Penny.
Brandon Ingram.
Like, you know, you got to wait to see what you can get out of maybe your generational Ron Harper in Lonzo Ball. But you got to wait till all these pieces come down before like you can actually like assume and see what you have. I mean, if New Orleans does anything, it's going to be moving a guy like JJ, but why move JJ? Because he's right. Your veteran leadership.
Yeah, but what is he really doing for you? I mean, he's just getting older. He's
hosting a great podcast, just doing it from Bourbon Street.
Yeah, I guess that's – I mean, Derek Favors is kind of a attractive option for some guys who don't want to go all in on a name but, you know, want to get some toughness, some physicality down low. Derek Favors might be a guy you move his money. Maybe you move Etuan Moore's money. Maybe you get something back. I'm not saying you're moving Ingram or Ball or any of these young pieces who are going to be around Zion in the coming years, but maybe you're moving some of your older pieces because you're like, well, screw veteran leadership. Let's just go all young and let's see what happens in the next 3 to 4 years here.
So, like, I'll trade you Tremont Waters and Carson Edwards and the rights to Marcus Thornton in Australia. And you give me back Derek Favors.
Sounds like great that. For me.
Sounds great for us.
Yes, I mean, at least in the short term. And you know, who knows long term. But as far as New Orleans goes, I mean, I think that they thought they were going to be making the playoffs this year.
100%.
And if that's not happening, then Derek Favors and J.J. Redick, the locker room stuff isn't doing anything for me.
Right. Yeah, we'll hire someone who retires next season to come in and be our locker room guy. Remember, like, a couple years ago, Keon Dooling in the Celtics.
Like, oh, so, my God, do I ever.
And he just, like, midway through the season, like, I think it was, like, there was one that he played on the Seas, and then the next season he didn't really retire, but he just kind of was, like, almost like a de facto assistant coach, and they just referred to his role as, that's Keon's job. And he was just basically, like, a locker room guy. And just kind of keeping everyone, like, thinking the right way and right mindset. And then he wound up playing for Memphis, like, later on that season. Like, so he was on the team but not playing. It was one of those weird Celtic seasons where it was, like, we're not really doing anything but competing in a weakened Eastern Conference. So the point, like, long-winded way of saying, there's other guys that can be your locker room leader without necessarily being the sixth man.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think we're talking about two sides of the same coin in that are they stuck or did they need to hit the reset button? My guess is you're probably right, and I think that New Orleans will probably wind up taking over the role that Minnesota has had since Karl Anthony Towns came into the NBA, and that, like, they've got a lot of potential and they're just not going anywhere. The team I had here, I wanted to pick your brain on a little bit, was the San Antonio Spurs. I think they need to blow it up. I think that it's time to hit the reset button, I think. It's been a great run, Pop. Really great run. But I think we're at the end of the runway here.
I don't think that Popovich rebuilds. No. I just don't see it. I mean, at his age, so that means that the era is over?
I think so.
The Spurs are moving forward, and Greg Popovich is going to retire or go coach somewhere else.
And I think he just moves full-time to Team USA. And
okay.
I think that the Knicks are the ones that get screwed again, because I think Becky Hammond, if this is in the cards, wouldn't you just stay and take over the Spurs? Me and, like, Becky and Tim taking over the Spurs and, like, rebuilding from scratch. I think that's way more poetic that Tim Duncan, the last time the Spurs had to reset, it was to get Tim Duncan. It would be very poetic to have Tim Duncan be the person who leads them through the next reset with Becky Hammond as well. I think that'd be amazing. But it's not a TV show. It's just on TV. So we'll see if that actually happens.
Yeah, I have a hard time thinking. I mean, maybe that's the move that they need to make. I just have a hard time thinking that they're gonna wave the white flag here. I think their young players really haven't stepped into the sort of roles that they envision them stepping into, and maybe years and years of just being able to replace a veteran with a young guy, you know, draft a second rounder or bring in a guy from Europe who can really help your cause. I think it just came so easy to San Antonio for so long that they're like, well, come on. All right, Derek White, Brent Forbes, you know, let's go. Come on. And it's just not really panning out to their liking, but it hurts to think of an NBA without Greg Popovich.
Yeah.
So I could see them maybe moving Rudy Gay, you know, maybe trying to find a way to move on from Patty Mills. I mean, Patty Mills is an attractive player, right? I mean, maybe you can get some assets, maybe move forward with your hodgepodge of young guys, but yeah, I guess it's probably more likely that one of their mid-range saviors gets moved.
I mean, I think if you're looking for to replace a power forward on San Antonio, I know of a team that has a bunch of them.
Yeah.
It's also a team that probably needs a pretty famous name to put some butts and some seats up there. So I would look at like...
Seats, two asses.
Yeah. So, I mean, two teams that both probably need to hit the reset button completely would be the New York Knicks and the San Antonio Spurs. Two different reasons why. And only, you know, and both teams are going to be fighting for the same outcome. Only one of them is going to, I don't know, avoid relegation. I think it's probably San Antonio, but I think San Antonio is going to take a long look in the mirror and try to do some, see what they can get back. But I don't think the future forward for them is DeMar DeRozan. I don't think it's LaMarcus Aldridge, and I know it's not Rudy Gay. So yeah. Before those guys can come up, and while the free agency next summer is looking like hot garbage, like maybe it's time to just do it now, see what you can get. And for a team like New York, you might be able to get some. You're not going to get the first overall pick from LaMarcus Aldridge, but you might nut something back. Who knows?
You can't roll forward with that many power forwards, possibly, can you, for an 82-game season? I mean, I'd imagine that Marcus Morris is going to wind up somewhere.
Right.
It's kind of interesting how Morris was going to the Spurs.
Yeah.
And then he went to the Knicks.
Yeah.
Is there any love lost there? I don't know. But I feel like he's going to wind up with a contender.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I mean, I think Marcus Morris, he's the kind of guy we've been talking about where he's that – he can come in and really kind of – he's not afraid to take a big shot. And I think he fits in with most teams. It's the ball does stop a little bit, so you need more powerful personalities than his to kind of keep it moving. So it would be interesting, yeah, depending on what type of role he'd be willing to accept and where he could go. But I just can't get over the fact that it's like at Madison Square Garden, Julius Randle is taking the ball down the floor. You know, it's like at the one guard, Frank Nikilatina, at the other guard, Julius Randle. It's just, you know, and like it's I'm joking, obviously, but like it's just they're in disarray. They are a dollar store version of a team where they're just going in and like best offer. They're Craigslist, basically. You know, if we're going to comp them to like a marketplace, an online marketplace, they're Craigslist of the New York Knicks.
They're the outdated way of doing transactions online.
It's either $200 or best offer for everything. And
take it all.
That's the end of my list. I actually have an interesting transition I'd like to make here, pal. Because we talked a lot about prognosticating what some teams could be doing, like what categories they fit into. I'd like to get your thoughts on if they're like what kind of role they're filling in, like the exchange here. Are they buyers? Are they sellers? Or how interested are they in shopping? Do you have time to go through a couple more here, pal?
Yeah, I mean, I want to really get into the Mavericks.
Yeah.
I think that they're a big buyer. They're a team that, you know, you're very interested in, or at least you have been through these episodes and our story that we're telling with this podcast. So I want to get in on them. I see them as a big buyer. We both see them as one move away. You see them as a bit more of a window shopper, though, than a buyer. What's the rationale there?
I think they've really kind of stumbled upon something, like a good little nucleus down there. Like, again, the NBA dynamic duos now, and I think as Kristaps continues kind of like his rehab season and kind of gets into the flow of what it's like to not play in New York, not that there's no urgency in Dallas, but it's not urgent. Like, they know that they're going to have to do something eventually, but
not like a foreigner son.
Right. But I think the fact that they have Luka, that's going to draw a lot of people. That's going to draw a lot more interest. That makes them a much more interesting team. They could attract someone in free agency, even though free agency is going to stink this year, but that wouldn't be having players vetoing, like, I'm not going to Dallas. You know, they just seem a little more serious. So I think they can sit back. They don't have to, like, show all their cards. So I think they'll be a little more of a window shopper, kind of passing by and being like, maybe I'm interested, maybe I'm not. I don't know. I'm just browsing. It's kind of like that's where I see the Mavs right now. Not that they're not buying, not that they're not selling, but I don't know. I don't really need to do anything. What do you got?
I mean, I just see it as, all right, if free agency this summer is going to be butt, and you're already one of the top teams in the West, and you got a presumptive MVP candidate, and another guy who, you know, people were really high on, maybe it's going to take him a little longer to get back into the swing of things than you thought, then why wouldn't you trade from your tremendous trove of depth? And if a lot of teams are going to be selling out there and selling some name guys, why don't you bring even more excitement into the fold in Dallas and maybe win a playoff round or try and win two.
Sure.
You know, and just usher in this new era here with the way that contracts, you know, are shorter in the NBA than they are in any other of the four major sports, you have to make moves as quickly as possible. So if you think you're on to something, why not double down and see if you can contend for the next 2 or 3 years before, say, there's another shift in the way things are going, and you have to consider doing something with Porzingis or whatever.
My question for that is, though, who's the guy that they would go after?
That's a great question.
You know, I mean, if you're dangling Tim Hardaway Jr., what contending team is going to bite on that? Like, who's...
And you've already moved draft picks out of town in the Porzingis deal.
Right, exactly.
So yeah, there's not a whole lot. It's basically some team that can take on money. You know, some team that's looking to get an expiring contract or two and just get a little bit of flexibility. And again, for what? Because free agency is that's the whole thing. Teams here might have just big expansive horizons. We have all these different things that we can do. Look at our options. I'm so excited for December 15th. This is going to be the greatest 6-week period ever, 7-week period of all time. And then you actually hit the reality of it, and we may not be seeing as big of a trade deadline or, you know, trade period here as it's cracked up to be. We might see a lot of sitting on hands by different teams.
And again, just kind of keeping Dallas in the crosshairs here, I think they're a team where it's like, if they could land a guy like Andre Iguodala, it's actually more interesting for how they could get players to prevent other teams from getting them. So if Andre Iguodala somehow went to Dallas for, say Tim Hardaway Jr., because maybe the young team in Memphis, who's looking to basically rebuild from nothing or rebuild around Ja, maybe they need, you know, maybe Tim Hardaway Jr. is their guy there to kind of help facilitate that. And in return,
the scorer.
Yeah. It evens them out a little bit, right? So, and maybe if Andre Iguodala goes back there, like, he's not going to be the guy that leads Dallas to the promised land, but it would prevent teams like either LA team or any other contender in the West being able to do so. So I think that's kind of, Dallas is playing the role of spoiler right now. And I think you can only do that if you're not too thirsty, which is why I've got him ranked where I got him as a window shopper.
Coming down the aisle, the spoiler. So Dallas to me is a really hot buyer. Do you have any others there?
Let's see. I only have a couple teams that are really listed as buyers. And I think those are teams that can take on a contractor or one move away or looking to hit the reset button, because they're going to be like, yeah, gimme. I'll take something on. So they're almost buying. They're a buyer by virtue of the status that they have. So those teams are Charlotte, Phoenix, and Minnesota, in my opinion. And for Charlotte, it's like I think that they're kind of in a tough spot because they do need to hit the reset button and their money's kind of all over the place. But I do think that they're not as bad as we all thought they were going to be. They're still bad, but not as bad as we thought they were going to be. So maybe looking to add something to their team to make them a little more legit, they'll be open to. So moving a guy like Marvin Williams, whatever they can do, or if they can find someone to like get out from underneath Nick Batum, or if they can move some stuff around, if they're going to build around Devonta and they're going to and Terry Rozier, they need someone else to kind of balance
Washington.
PJ Washington,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. So add something, you know, add a put some heft on that roster with a bunch of guys who are kind of. Look like nice complimentary players.
Maybe you're Derek Favors from New Orleans. Maybe they're like, yeah, we'll take it. Come on.
Well, there's some heft, certainly. Yeah. There's some meat there. There's a guy who likes to bang in the low post.
Phoenix as well. I think Phoenix falls right in line there, too. Off to a hot start, way back down to earth now. But they've got professional grown-ups on that team now. So Ricky Rubio, I think, is a great guy for Phoenix. You need more stuff like that. They're going to be looking for, like, we're onto something here with guys like Baines and Ricky Rubio. So they're going to be looking for more kind of like, not necessarily like end of the journeyman, but some more the NBA vets. They could be looking to pick some stuff up, especially for those guys like that are on teams that their teams are looking to clear out.
So maybe like a Rudy Gay, maybe a J.J. Redick. And I see guys who are more backcourt or wings for them because, you know, when you talk about Ayton Baines, Dario Saric, Kelly Oubre, who's, I guess, kind of more of a small forward, occasionally a power forward type player, but you got some big man depth. You know, in the backcourt, you got Booker and Rubio, and I think you'd like to add to that if you're them to really complete the picture of what a Phoenix Suns playoff team could be after, God knows, what has it been, 10 years since they've had a playoff team in the Valley of the Sun? So... that's intriguing there. Your list kind of shows a lot of guys in the West as window shoppers, guys who, you know, may not really be open for business, may not really be looking to make a super big move. And that's probably, I'm guessing, just because of the tightness up there at the top of the standings. I mean, I see a team like a Denver as a big buyer because that's a team that, we've talked about kind of like the shine of their stars. Like Jokic is obviously a very talented dude. He is statistically is he's down a little bit this season, but you know, they're still playing good basketball with him and Jamal Murray is like their two leading guys, but they don't have the kind of cachet that a Harden and Westbrook, that a George and Leonard, that a LeBron and a Anthony Davis have. So maybe they would be out to look to get rid of a Gary Harris or, you know, somebody who's, okay, nice player, but could be more. And bring in someone who's a legit star or, you know, capable third banana, you know, someone who can really put the ball in the basket. Millsap's still playing all right, but again, he's getting long in the tooth for them. So I see them as a buyer.
And I think that, like, the interesting side of this is the phrase I keep throwing around in this pod is that two sides of the same coin. I think we're actually talking about, you know, different sides of a Rubik's Cube here, honestly, because for someone like Denver, using, you know, you're right, you know, everything you said is spot on, but I don't think they're going to be the ones who are necessarily pursuing a lot of those trades. I think there's other teams that have some of those guys like that might be a superstar that's just in a bad situation and teams looking like maybe it's time to get out of this. Like, so what Kevin Love will say. That it's like, yeah, we have a lot of stuff that I think they have something going really well in Denver right now that they could use it, but they're not necessarily going to be pursuing it. They'd let that stuff come to them, which is what I'm thinking of window shoppers. That's a little bit more like that. So, but a window shopper turns into a buyer when the store's about to close, you know? So maybe not at the opening of the trade window, but maybe a couple weeks before the trade deadline sneaks up, they try to make a move, and they make one right at the deadline as well. The old Danny Ainge special. Like, I'll call this in at the end of the trade deadline, West Coast time.
Let's, as you mentioned Danny Ainge there, let's circle it back to the Boston Celtics, because this podcast, much like Ric Flair right now, is a 60-minute man. So, in the interest of putting a bow on our discussion, and I'm sure we're going to have plenty more trade-based discussions on this pod as we go along through the winter here. You got to get something to keep the stove going.
That's right.
The Celtics, we both view them as a window shopper, a team that's one move away. I think we could agree that move would be a big man, right?
Yeah.
Do you have any specific thoughts on you know, the Celtics status and also where you could see them going?
I think, like, the interesting thing about the Celtics is that, and again, I'm biased, right? I mean, but I think the interesting thing about the C's is that they were, in my estimation, one of the first teams in the NBA, of the modern NBA, to move towards a full-on positionless basketball as a way of life. You have some other teams that have done it as well, but they're more superstar-driven. Like, they've got superstars 1 through 5, right? Or you've got basically LeBron flanked by whoever can stay out there with them. Doesn't matter if they're you know, what position they're truly playing, because their function is to get the ball to LeBron James or to score when LeBron draws all of the attention. So,
and yes.
But the Celtics have done it in a way where it's like they're just rolling out their best five based on the matchup. So if everyone is pretty much equal, it's like you're playing with Legos here, just kind of moving people in and out. That's really kind of their style. So I think that's what it's been thus far. What I'm curious about is if the Celtics are kind of going to be living and breathing like the next evolution of that. And I think that really kind of comes down with thinking about a big man. Like, so if Enes Kanter or Robert Williams III are going to kind of be your de facto big guys right now, they're the biggest guys on the team, but they're playing mostly smaller fives just in like the pivot point. Is Grant Williams that guy? I don't know. Are they just going to keep bringing in guys like that throughout? You know, Daniel Tice, Vincent Poirier, are these guys that are actually going to be on the team long term? Are they essentially just like upper level trade bait? You know, I don't know. So, I mean, yes, they do need a big man for sure, but I don't know if that's going to cement them in the style of play that's around right now, or if they're going to be thinking about more positionless basketball and the role the five plays on a team 3 years from now, and try to get someone and build them into that as the rest of the team continues to grow as well. So that's why I have them ranked as a window shopper, because it's like, I don't know if they know what they know. I don't know if they know what they're looking for yet. They're almost waiting to see what they're presented with, and I wouldn't be married to that thing no matter what it is they land.
Yeah, I kind of feel like unless Robert Williams grows into being a transformative big man in the league, none of those guys are guys who you could see on the roster maybe 2 or 3 years from now. They're just kind of – I mean, Grant Williams is a helpful player. And maybe they hang on to him because he'll be good, cheap help throughout his rookie contract. But none of those guys, at least right now, move the needle as this is an impact big man. I think they can be impactful in spurts. Like, Daniel Tice can go on a 2-week block party like he did earlier in the season, play some really good basketball. And his canter, you know, you see it in spurts where he's boxing guys out. He's providing a roadblock there in the lane that the Celtics don't get with a lot of their other players. But, you know, those are traits that you can find from a lot of players throughout the league. So the C's, you know, the recipe is Kemba Walker's the superstar. He's the break glass in case of guy. He's the proven guy who can put up the points. They're trying to figure out what Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown grow into. And meanwhile, Gordon Hayward is there to facilitate and get injured a lot.
That's right.
and you know, when he's not hurt, you know, maybe you've got the one team in the league who's got four guys who could pop for 30 points any night of the season. So while that's intriguing, you don't know if it's a recipe for long-term success. So, yeah, they'll window shop. Perhaps they could find a big man who really fits whatever mold they're trying to find and helps them match up against a team like a Philly or just another giant team in the East, because they're going to run into huge teams, and it's going to be small ball Celtics against huge teams of trees in the playoffs.
I think my biggest fear with the Celtics, and again, this is because I'm a fan and they're my team, right? I mean, we're a podcast fighting out of Boston, Massachusetts. We're Celtics homers. We're just trying to sound non-regional in doing it. My thought is, like, yeah, there's some interesting guys out there you can make a run for, but what do you want to give up to get it? Who's your favorite center out there that you think the Celtics could conceivably get? First guy that comes to mind, who's a center you'd want the C's to go after? Would you want them to go after someone like LaMarcus Aldridge in a perfect
yes.
world? Okay.
Oh, I'd love them to have LaMarcus Aldridge.
What are you willing to give up to get him, though?
That's the thing, because, yeah. I mean, and another guy I've mentioned is Jared Allen of Brooklyn.
Yes.
And I don't know if he's available right now. Again, like I just mentioned, he's cheap help to Brooklyn because he's in year three, and they need guys with contracts like that. Plus, they're in the division with you. But if I were to have a guy like a Jared Allen, the pivot, then I'd consider moving on from a Marcus Smart type.
Okay.
But again, does that throw off everything that you have going with your team?
Right.
I mean, that's kind of the heart and soul of your team there. I didn't mention him as one of those guys who can pop for 30 points. He's definitely one of those guys who's like a big piece of the framework that you have right now. And I don't see Brad or Danny disrupting that to bring in an old school traditional pivot man type.
Right. I mean, the guy you got to be thinking about if you're making a big swing like that, especially for someone like LaMarcus Aldridge, be probably Gordon Hayward, right? The money probably matches
right,
almost
right.
exactly. So if you're gonna trade Gordon Hayward for LaMarcus Aldridge, I think their contract length is probably pretty similar too, right? And like maybe 1 or 2 years. I think Hayward has this year, and then next year is his fourth year, which I believe is a player option. I'm not sure what LaMarcus his contract status is, but you could make that work right now if you're going to really try to make a push for it. But you give up Gordon Hayward in doing that. You know, and I don't know if LaMarcus Aldridge is the replacement you need, even though it makes your chances of matching up against Philly a little bit better. You're battling down low with Embiid and Horford versus just marching into battle with LaMarcus on this side. LaMarcus, Kemba, and three wings, essentially. So it's I think the Celtics are almost stuck in the way that it's like we need how we have it built now to work out. Or we need some of the younger guys to kind of step up, which is something they've been great at thus far in the season. But I don't know if you can really kind of make a big swing at someone and kind of get what you truly need back.
Yeah, the formula is what the formula is right now. If Gordon Hayward is up and you know he's going to leave, if there's something that the Celtics realize that they just don't see their future working out maybe the way they planned, maybe they do kind of backtrack and say, okay, we need a more traditional big man.
Right.
But we're not seeing that this season.
No.
So, yeah, they'll be window shopping, baby, but you're just out there to kind of look pretty and be seen.
And that is what the
Celtics will be doing.
And you've got the Memphis pick to dangle out there if you want to.
But do you want to use that
on Jared Allen?
Exactly.
You know? I think it's more of like, I think Danny and Brad are really good at like, we like our team. We like how we play ball. And we're willing to wait for our competition to ultimately get hurt or get antsy and work our way that way. It's the Celtics more than any other team in the NBA, I think, are playing their game. They're running towards something they like as opposed to away from something they don't. I think every other team is basically, it's like, we got to do this now. We have to respond. And that's no good. Like, or they react rather. The Celtics are responding, other teams are reacting. And I think that's kind of how we get to Banner 18, ultimately.
Hopefully. I mean, I like that team too. I definitely like the guys that we have. There's a lot of encouraging points to the start that they've had to the season. More than the start to the season at this point. I mean, we are not knee deep, we're like thigh deep in the NBA season.
Yeah.
And we're only going to be sinking from here. So, you know, almost Christmas time. Get into it, NBA fans. We got a lot to talk about on the Knuckle Pushups podcast in the coming weeks and months. But I figured this was just a way to dive right in.
Yeah, man.
And apparently legs first because we're thigh deep.
Get like wet the beak. Get that noodle cooking. Sean's out of scotch. I need to watch The Masked Singer. I think we've had enough for tonight. So, like, I think it's only just begun, baby. I mean, the window opens on the 15th, and we're gonna be thinking about this and tweeting about this and seeing a lot of this stuff until early February. So strap in. Here we go.
All right. For Patrick O'Connor, I'm Sean Silver. This is Knuckle Push-Ups. We'll talk to you again next week.